Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
What we need right now is more information on all of these kind of incidences so the American people have full information.
Senator Sullivan wants more transparency from the White House on the object shot down off Alaska's coast. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 13th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, more Alaskans are having their food stamp benefits restored, but the long backlog continues.
It's really frightening to live that way, thinking that your basic needs of food and shelter aren't going to be met.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Annie Wright Schools, located in Tacoma, Washington, offers rich, thoughtful, and internationally recognized programs for students from around the world. A variety of boarding options are available year-round. There's a virtual preview of the school, the faculty, and campus for high school students seeking to explore international baccalaureate academics, arts, and athletics at aw.org/Alaska. This message sponsored by Annie Wright Schools.
White House officials said today that they still had not come to any conclusions about what U.S. fighter jets shot out of the skies near Dead Horse on Friday, in the Yukon on Saturday, or over Lake Huron on Sunday. Here's White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
I think we all need to be humble here in terms of what our ability is to positively identify stuff from fighter aircraft that are going several hundred miles an hour past, essentially, in terms of relative motion, a stationary object that was not very big.
Kirby says these objects were not being maneuvered and didn't appear to have any self-propulsion. He says it's likely they were moving with the prevailing winds, which blow west to east. Unlike these three objects, U.S. authorities have said the first object they shot down on February 4th was a Chinese spy balloon. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan wants more transparency from the White House. Here he is speaking to a Fox News host on Monday.
So what we need right now is more information on all of these kind of incidences so the American people have full information. I think that's going to be really important in the next few days.
All three members of Alaska's congressional delegation and Governor Mike Dunleavy have made similar points in their public statements about the incursions. They also say securing Alaska's airspace is a national security imperative and that Alaska needs a strong military presence to counter or deter neighboring adversaries. Over the years, the Inuit Circumpolar Council has nervously watched military activity increase in the Arctic. Jimmy Stotz was the organization's president and recently retired.
Some of these conflicts elsewhere are spilling over and into the Arctic. I'm worried about that. Relationships, particularly over there in Northern Europe, the Scandinavian countries and Russia, how things there could pretty easily, I think, go sideways.
He says these aerial objects may be a distraction from wider threats that come with militarizing the Arctic. After a months-long wait, thousands of Alaskans have gotten their food stamps, but thousands more are still waiting. The state says it's making progress, but admits it's skipping some federal requirements to do that. Claire Strempel reports for KTOO.
Mary Ruth Moore of Soldotna has been waiting on her food stamps since she reapplied for herself and her four children in October.
In a way, I feel like I've kind of become a scientist in the kitchen, trying to make things go further.
Since then, she's been watering down crockpot meals to stretch the food she has.
So what that's boiled down to is less vegetables, less fruits, and especially the, fresh ones.
The state's food stamp backlog began in August with a flood of 8,000 applications after the pandemic health emergency lapsed. State officials say the Division of Public Assistance is working through the backlog faster now, but Alaskans say that months of going without have left them with debt and fears for the future. Moore is still waiting.
It's a very powerless feeling to know that the situation you're in is so dependent, but there's no one to reach out to. There doesn't seem to be any accountability.
Moore says she's been relying on credit cards to get through. She says she worries about how she'll pay them off and knows thousands of other people are going through the same thing. Moore connected with Alaska Legal Services, the state's largest provider of civil aid, and filed a case last week. Alaska Legal Services Advocacy Director Lee Dickey says they file 20 to 30 new cases a day, and it's not slowing down.
No, it's just booming. It hasn't tapered at all.
She says they had 200 complaints last month, and they're taking on more pro bono lawyers to help handle the workload. They help Alaskans who've been waiting too long file a case with the state and get their benefits.
It is January 24th, 2023. This is the first Health and Social Services Committee from the Senate.
At legislative briefings in late January, leaders from the Department of Health blamed the backlog on its technology and the effects of a cyber attack on the department in May of 2021. Deputy Commissioner Emily Ricci said the department has finished issuing food stamps to people who applied in September and is working on October applications.
The team is currently working through October recertifications and saw the number of recertifications being processed daily increase substantially last week, which is positive.
Eligibility workers who spoke with KTOO say chronic understaffing is behind the slowdowns. But they did agree they have been working faster. They say it's because leadership directed them to skip mandatory federal processing requirements. Deb Etheridge, the new director of the state's Division of Public Assistance, says the department is doing everything it can to get people their benefits.
We're taking all measures that we can to expedite this food stamp recertification process.
Skipping some verifications has risks, both to recipients and to the state. If people get larger benefits than they should, they'll have to reimburse the government later. And Etheridge acknowledges the state could get fined by the federal government. But she says they aren't hiding shortcuts from the federal government.
We are talking with our federal partners and engaged with them, and they're aware of steps that we're taking, and there may be some sanctions, perhaps, but it's nothing that we're doing without full awareness and transparency.
Department of Health doesn't say understaffing is a root cause of its backlog, but it recently made more than 50 hires. Etheridge says they're also contracting with new workers to answer phones and fix the computer problems they say are behind the slowdown. But she says her larger goal is to build a department that won't experience this kind of backlog again.
Ideally, it's a one-touch processing for all applications, which means that individuals who are applying for benefits can call or they can apply online and they can get immediate feedback.
Natalie Richards of Soldotna had her benefits restored in January, after 5 months of waiting. She says the experience left her with credit card debt and nagging fears that it could happen again.
It's really frightening to live that way, thinking that your basic needs of food and shelter aren't going to be met.
She says state services are failing the most vulnerable Alaskans. She says people need better from state leaders.
They still go home and eat their dinner. You know, I mean, what about the people they were responsible and to look out for?
She says she's grateful the state paid her benefits for all the months she was waiting, but she doesn't feel like the trial is over. She says she's using the money sparingly, just in case something like this happens again. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, lawmakers welcome Valentines from kids with a message on the education budget.
We're going to be talking about early education, funding K through 12, all the way up to the university. And it's a big deal that they're here today.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
As of today, Alaska's largest city had surpassed 7 feet of snow for the season, with an exceptionally fluffy snowfall overnight. And while the overall amount of snow in Anchorage is significant, weather watchers will tell you that the fluffiness matters too. And how do they predict fluffiness? Well, that of course involves everybody's favorite floating friend, the high-altitude balloon. That's what National Weather Service climate researcher Brian Brettschneider tells us back for our Ask a Climatologist segment. First, though, Brettschneider says Anchorage's snowfall is pushing into record territory.
We are up to, in Anchorage, 85 inches of snow for the season. So normally by this date, we would have 55 inches. So we're 2.5 feet above normal. And for this point in the season, we are in fifth place for the most snow through February 13th. And that's looking at basically about 100 years of snowfall data. So, you know, we're top 5% right now.
That's interesting. We're in the top 5 so far this winter. It certainly could snow more here in Anchorage. It's only the middle of February. So I think what was really notable to people waking up this morning and seeing how much snow there was out there as far as what it looks like covering, you know, the landscape was how fluffy it was. Can you tell me more about that? I mean, how fluffy was the snow? I know there's a measurement for this, right?
Yeah, so that's a term we use called the snow to liquid ratio. And that is literally, if you melt the snow, how much liquid water do you get? And normally in Anchorage, it's about 12 to 14 to 1. So every maybe 12 or 14 inches of new snow, so not snow that's already ground, but new snow, if you were to melt that down, you would get about an inch of water. What we found with the snow that occurred on the 12th was for a number of hours, it had a snow to liquid ratio of greater than 40 to 1. So you would need at least 40 inches of that kind of fluffy snow to melt down into an inch of water. You can imagine, you know, if you're a weather forecaster, not only do you have to try to forecast, you know, how much moisture is going to come in, but then you also have to try to forecast how fluffy it's going to be. And so if the thermodynamic profile of the atmosphere had been a little bit different, it might have only produced half the amount of snow or even less.
What is the thermodynamic profile?
It's just like it sounds.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
No, it's, you know, so when in the atmosphere, you've got liquid water droplets, and even if it's well below freezing, they're in a liquid form. And when they come into contact with something, either another snowflake or a piece of dust or sea salt, it freezes. And the crystalline structure that it freezes into is highly dependent on the temperature that occurs at. And there's an optimal temperature in the atmosphere where you can make ice crystals that look like the kind you make in kindergarten art project, you know, where it's got a bunch of little branches and arms. And that's between minus 10 and minus 20 degrees Celsius, which is between 15 degrees Fahrenheit and, say, minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's a real sweet spot temperature for making ice crystals that have these kind of little arms. And then if you can keep that profile several thousand feet up in the atmosphere, because it's got all these little arms, it's a lot of little points of contact that new little water droplets can stick to and crystallize on, create their own little branches. So if you can have this part of the atmosphere that's in this temperature range and is fully saturated, you really can maximize the crystalline structure that makes the most little branches. And what that does is it traps a lot of air, you know, between it. And so we think of fluffy snow. Really, it's snow that has a lot of air in between it. And so that's really what we had yesterday. If you look at the weather balloon that went up, it actually had a very classic, perfect profile for what we call dendritic snow growth. You get the dendritic growth. It's little arms that are going off in all directions that can trap a lot of air.
Yeah, fun to play in too. And fun to talk about. And I think we've used this word in the past, but I'm going to go ahead and say that it was flufftastic. Would you agree?
I would. I'll petition that to be put in the American Meteorological Society glossary.
I would love that. Brian, you mentioned a weather balloon. And, you know, not to take too hard of a turn here, but balloons that travel through the atmosphere high up have been in the news lately, at least one of them confirmed to be a balloon. And so I thought maybe you could just remind us, how does that work? These friendly balloons, the ones that we like here that the National Weather Service uses, what do they do?
Yeah, so around the United States, there are, I believe, 92 locations where two weather balloons per day get launched. And around the world, it's over 800 locations. And they're synchronized so that they're launched at midnight and noon Greenwich Mean Time every day. So every place launches them at the same time. And that's really important because it gives us a snapshot of the atmosphere. So here on the ground, we have thermometers and anemometers, and you know, we can record what's going on here at the ground. But we really need to know what the atmosphere is like thousands, tens of thousands of feet up. It's very important. So in Alaska, we've got these 13 sites. And in the last few years, they've been transitioned to automated weather balloon launchers. So twice a day, it's either scheduled or someone pushes a button and it fills up a balloon and it launches it. So it's really quite a neat process. And one of the questions I get asked really the most is, wow, isn't that a lot of pollution? You know, what happens if it falls in the ocean? And they've really come a long way in how biodegradable they are. So there's a few little metal parts in the middle of the instrument pack, but most of it is designed to be really quite biodegradable, and it, you know, basically disintegrates in a relatively short amount of time, you know, months to a year or two, I think.
That was National Weather Service climate researcher Brian Brettschneider, the climatologist for our Ask a Climatologist segments. Well, preschoolers, parents, and advocates delivered Valentine's Day cards to Alaska state legislators today. As KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, they asked lawmakers to have a heart for kids as they make budget decisions this session.
Nikki Love pulls a red wagon full of Valentine's Day cards through the front doors of the Capitol building. She is the community engagement coordinator for the Association for the Education of Young Children.
We have an over 20-year tradition of bringing Valentine's to our state lawmakers. We make personal visits to as many as we can in their offices and then greet them on their way into the committee room and ask them to please remember and prioritize children when they're making policy.
Love says prioritizing kids feels especially urgent this year as school districts across the state call for more education funding and childcare workers in Juneau push for higher wages.
We have to make it these jobs worthwhile to people because it is critical that they're highly educated since they're caring for our next generation.
The cards featured photos of the kids at school with construction paper hearts and handwritten signatures. The group walked into legislators' offices to drop them off.
Wonderful, thank you so much.
For 5.5-year-old Avon McHenry, the cards were also a chance to practice cursive.
I love cursive. It's pretty fun because I get to write in different shapes of the letters.
Her mom, Sadie McHenry, hadn't been to the Capitol since high school. She says even if these kids are too young to understand the importance of school funding, visiting the Capitol is valuable.
I think it's really important that kids understand how the government works from an early age so that way they can better use their voices.
Governor Mike Dunleavy wasn't available, but they dropped the biggest card in the wagon off at his office. It included a collage of photos of the students and was signed by each one of them. Inside was a request to increase the state's per-student funding, also known as the base student allocation, by at least $1,000. Fairbanks Senator Scott Kawasaki says the kids made a strong impression.
Just seeing their bright eyes at 10 in the morning is a real treat. You know, we're going to be talking about early education, funding K-12, all the way up to the university, and it's a big deal that they're here today.
The group stopped by Sitka Senator Bert Stedman's office on their way to the House floor.
Thanks for coming by. We got to go to the floor.
The kids handed out the rest of their cards as representatives walked in, insisting that Soldotna Representative Justin Refridge take an extra.
Well, I don't want to keep all your nice Valentines.
Parents and teachers hope the visit puts a face to the policy decisions lawmakers are considering this year.
There are 50 states in the United States of America.
In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Alaska Pacific University offers degree-seeking students the opportunity to receive donor-funded scholarships, grants, and other financial aid. apply for admission to be automatically considered for most scholarships, complete financial aid applications by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Rural airports are permanent fixtures in small communities and temporary stopovers for many travelers. A student-run cafe in Igiagig offers refreshments to both community members and travelers flying across the vast expanse of Bristol Bay. KDLG's Izzy Ross stopped in for a cup of coffee and has this report.
Sometimes the only thing you want after taking multiple small planes across southwest Alaska in the dead of winter is a hot cup of coffee. And you're in luck if your destination happens to be Igiagig, a small village at the head of the Kwajalleq River on Iliamna Lake.
There you go, Izzy.
Do I just pull up here?
Yeah, pull up on that. You are free to leave.
Awesome. Visitors who disembark there walk past a sign that says Igiaram Mikchara, Igiagig Airport in Yupik, and through the building's double doors. To the left is a small, neat cafe. Bottles of flavored syrups line one wall, and a shiny red espresso machine sits in the corner next to a sink and stacks of paper cups. The student-run shop offers refreshments to community members, visitors, and those flying onward across the vast expanses of Bristol Bay. Denali Bybee, 14, and Avery Nelson, 13, have worked with several classmates in shifts at the cafe since November. They've earned around $6,000 for their student government. Nelson says the money is used for class trips and projects.
It's part of the student council, so it goes to the school and stuff. On Halloween, we have like a Halloween carnival every year. School trips, things we need and stuff. You go
first, though. Both Bybee and Nelson enjoy different parts of the job.
Making the coffee shots.
I like doing the syrups and the powder.
Did you get coffee this morning?
I did.
The cafe adds another layer of activity to Igiagig's already bustling airport, which is both a permanent fixture in the village and a temporary stopover for many travelers. The airport is a special place. Black and white archival photos of local families line the hallway walls. A taxidermied white wolf stands ready to swat at a belligerent-looking stuffed wolverine in a glass case across the way. Near the airport's entrance is the Igiagig gift shop, which has local items for sale. Jewelry, baskets, dolls, paintings and prints, books, and a fair amount of swag for those who want to support the school's sports team, the No-See-ums. The airport is also a meeting place.
Hey, Carl, I did the hard part for you.
A couple office rooms are dedicated to a variety of work, from the Native Corporation's administration and village council meetings to infrastructure planning and general maintenance. That means the cafe's regulars are locals who have their own special drinks.
White chocolate mocha with coconut.
Americano with caramel and hazelnut.
That's the favorite of Tribal Council President Alexana Salmon.
Hey, it's called the Madame President.
That's awesome.
Whether flying over Bristol Bay's lakes, tundra, and mountains, or walking down the road for a community meeting, coffee at the Igiagig Airport is a delight for all. In Igiagig, I'm Izzy Ross.
Years ago, Alaska tapped into one of its most important resources, the creativity and talent of its young people. The Sitka Fine Arts Camp incorporated on February 9th, 1973. KCAW's Robert Woolsey spoke with Roger Schmidt, who, between his years as a student and his years as director, has been with the camp for a quarter century.
Celebrating the Sitka Fine Arts Camp's 50th anniversary, Roger Schmidt was not attending a champagne gala. He was home on his couch recovering from a cold. Although the Sitka Fine Arts Camp is a summer program, it requires vigilance and effort year-round to sustain, or, as Schmidt puts it,
keeping our camp alive year-to-year is like keeping a fire burning in the southeast Alaska rainforest. you turn your back on it for a second, and it's not even ashes.
Not even ashes, just cold, wet dirt. Over its five-decade history, the camp never was fully extinguished, but it came close. Initially, it was housed on the campus of Sheldon Jackson College. When the college ran into financial trouble, the camp moved to Mount Edgecombe High School. Year to year, there was never certainty about where the camp would be held or even if it would be held. A former camper, Schmidt, arrived on scene in 2000 and realized that the fire had not quite gone out.
It was on its, you know, last legs once again. But what happened is when I taught at it, even though there weren't a lot of students there, I was so moved by how much they cared about what they were doing. And I realized that it was a much smaller camp that year than the camps I had gone to as a kid, but it was still the same spirit, had the same value, and that value to the kids where they felt like this was a spot where they felt like it was their place. And for many kids, the only place they feel like is their place.
Now permanently housed on the former Sheldon Jackson College campus, the camp has nearly 700 students registered for this coming summer from Alaska and all over the country. Schmidt considers this the rebound year after full closure in 2020, running at 50% in 2021, and a recovery year in 2022, when managing the pandemic still loomed large over camp operations. Beginning at 12:01 a.m. on January 1st, registration opened for 2023, and 200 students signed up within the first 4 days, many in the first few minutes. Schmidt says this is a student-led phenomenon and one that he is grateful for.
The thing is, we never made anybody do it. The kids did it, meaning we have all these teenagers that the first thing they do in their year is they sign up for camp. And to me, that is like, it's just so touching. It's so motivating. It's so inspiring to think that over 200 students out there that decided that the first thing they would do in the year 2023 was sign up for the Sitka Fine Arts Camp.
As of press time, there was only one opening left in the high school camp and three places in the middle school camp and a few places in the musical theater camp. Schmidt doesn't overlook the fact that reaching a 50th anniversary, though very significant for an Alaskan arts institution, necessarily means things will get easier. There will always be battles, challenges, and obstacles. He credits everyone involved in the camp for their help making it this far. When asked what the secret to success was, to fanning that flame, Schmidt didn't hesitate. "It's willpower," he said. "It's people who care and who care a lot who are keeping it alive." Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea and Rhonda McBride in Anchorage, Claire Strimple and Katie Anastas in Juneau, Izzy Ross in Igiagic, or should I say Izziagic, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Annie Fite produced tonight's show, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
The Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, offering guests hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and the Red Lantern Steak and Spirits Restaurant. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.